and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. It's time for our weekly books discussion, and joining me in the studio today to go through some literary picks is the founder of Unbound Publishing, John Mitchinson. John, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Tom.
Let's kick off with the latest from Irish author Emma Donoghue, The Wonder. Well, where should we start? Do you want to give us a quick plot summary or tell us a little bit more about Emma?
Emma Donoghue is probably best known to people for her novel Room, which was made into a film last year, which got shortlisted for Best Picture Oscar. And that was kind of based on the Franz Fritzl case. It was obviously the idea of somebody being kept inside as a hostage, a young girl being kept inside as a hostage in a room. This is a return to her kind of her métier as a historical novelist, which is how she's sort of probably best known. And it's set in 1850s Ireland. It's a very, very, there's almost a Room aspect to it, because it's about a relationship between a woman who is Lib Wright, who is a nurse who's trained under Florence Nightingale in the Crimea, and is sent out to Ireland to investigate this wonder, which is this this phenomenon which is based on fact. There was, for about 200 years in rural Ireland, rural Wales, there were these fasting women. They were usually women rather than men, who were apparently able to survive without eating any food. And the story is that this girl, who's an 11-year-old called Anna O'Donnell, hasn't eaten anything for over, I think, sort of 2 months, and is in a small town, kind of midlands of Ireland, right in the centre of Ireland, and the community is kind of excited. This is kind of the years after the Irish potato famine, and the community is marking this out as a potential miracle. So Lib Wright, the nurse, is sent in there to figure out what's going on. You know, she's very practical, sort of, this is the beginning of nursing. So she's English, and she's in the middle of what is fairly deep and superstitious form of Irish Catholicism. And the relationship between Lib and the girl Anna is wonderful. It's brilliantly done. I won't give away the ending, but it's a remarkable, but again, it's dense, psychological, in a way, a kind of a thriller, because you know, the story quickly becomes clear: is Anna going to survive, or is she going to succumb?
So. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I guess you've got writers who are very strong on tautly constructed plots, and I guess whether you sort of parachute in into a historical piece from Ireland in the mid 19th century to something more contemporary, you know, if you're a plot maestro. Yeah. You know how to spin out a yarn.
Stephen King reviewed this book in the New York Times, and said it was the language, the storytelling was as sturdy and serviceable as a good pair of brogues,
which I guess
if it's Stephen King saying it, you kind of it isn't a Stephen King novel. Let's be absolutely honest. There are no fireworks, but the psychological tension between the two women, who become in a way very close friends. And the attempts of Lib Wright, the nurse, when she realises that Anna is an extraordinary child. She's incredibly bright, incredibly friendly, incredibly personable, not a kind of, you know, fading sort of guttering candle in the way that you might think from the story. But she is not eating. And therefore, you know, we, the reader, know, and I think Lib begins to realise that she will die unless this changes. I mean, she starts out trying to trick Anna into admitting that she isn't eating, and then it becomes really a battle for her to save Anna from the kind of the madness and the superstition that's going on around her. There is another reason why she's not eating, but I'm not going to give you that away. But I think Emma Donoghue is a wonderful historical writer, but she's a brilliant psychologist as well, and that was kind of what made Room work. She writes sparsely. I mean, there's not a lot of kind of florid prose in this book, and quite opposite in a way to that. But what there is real psychological insight. And I think an interesting thing, it's England and Ireland, it's modern medicine and superstition, all the way the themes are handled, they're not handled in any kind of heavy-handed way, it's done very well. And by the end of the story, it is an absolutely kind of, again, without giving too much away, it is, you know, the climax of the book is intensely kind of moving and difficult and remarkable.
I was just going to ask briefly, John, and you actually alluded to this there. We talked about Emma Donoghue's historical novels, but I think, is this right? Am I right in saying it's the first set in Ireland, which, of course, her homeland?
Yeah.
Is it wrong to look at, you know, commentaries on modern Ireland? You mentioned some of the things there, new medicine and old, and new Ireland and the relationship with England. Are there strands that maybe run through to the present day almost?
I would say that there are definitely strands that run through to the present day. I mean, think the limitations. I mean, this is a book on to some degree spiritual nurture is something that, you know, people are still looking for, and organized religion has obviously been the main route for that. But popular mysticism, that as well as the Catholicism here, that the desire to make the girl into a saint, and the fact what Emma Donoghue does really well. I was a great fan of one of her very early books, which was called The Woman Who Gave Birth to Rabbits, which was a series of stories based on true things that had happened. This was a woman in Godalming who in the 18th century apparently gave birth to rabbits. It was obviously not true, but she was, in a way, she's going back in that book to that early kind of collection of stories, but turning it into a much bigger narrative. I think there are lessons and insights into the psychology of religion here, and also the limitations of medicine. I mean, as the nurse, I mean, trained by Nightingale, kind of in an Enlightenment humanistic way, in the end, without again giving too much away, she's not really able to finally do what she was there sent to do, either to solve the mystery or to, I'll leave it there.
Exactly.
I'm getting dangerously close to
it. I don't know where that sits on the spoiler alert.
Sorry.
People can judge for themselves.
It's a very, very readable. I mean, I think it's a very good follow-up for those people who liked Room. There's plenty in there. Even if you don't think you like historical fiction, there's a lot of real wisdom in this book.
The Wonder by Emma Donoghue's out now, published by Little Brown and Company. Let's discuss, and I'm going to try my best Scandi pronunciation. Hygge. The Danish expression that means coziness or something akin to that. Now, it's been the topic of a number of books.
Sure.
Well, rather a large number. And we're talking about Signe Johansson's book, How to Hygge. I guess before we talk about the specifics of that, with your literary hat on, a publisher of many years standing, isn't it extraordinary that you still get these amazing
clusters,
moments, these zeitgeist things?
Yeah, yeah.
What have there been a dozen books? No one's batted an eyelid about this other than people doing these very dry histories of the region. And suddenly there's 12 experts. Why does that still happen?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I know Sig Johansson, and she is the perfect person to do this because she has a foot in both worlds. She's a food historian. She's a wonderful chef. She's the best person in the world if you want to know where to go and eat in London. She tries everywhere. She's brilliant. But she is absolutely also as stylish, cool, in a way, sort of a walking embodiment of all that is fabulous about modern Nordic culture. Because Nordic culture is—it's interesting. It's having a massive moment. I mean, obviously, you know, we've all watched the sort of Nordic noirs. We've read the novels. We're all, you know, eating meatballs and buying Billy bookcases in IKEA. But I think we're also, you know, we're all desperately keen to go and see if Noma is the world's greatest restaurant. It's an interesting thing. I think there is maybe in a world where there's so many elements of this book, and I think it's if you're going to do the Hygge book, this is great. It's got brilliant recipes in it. It's got really sane advice about health and fitness, about getting outside. I love the fact, you know, Sig knows more about whiskey than anyone I know, which is a remarkable thing. She's incredibly fit and healthy, but also loves
that's
good,
that's a hard thing. That marriage is tricky.
Loves good whiskey, and it's that sort of strange combination that you get in. There's a sort of balance. We all, you know, the cliches about Scandinavia, that it's sort of brooding and dark and Nordic and prone to introspection and over and drinking too much. There is also the fantastic lightness of touch that you get there, the beautiful furniture, you know, the absence of clutter. There are so many different kind of modern themes coming together in Hygge. The idea that, you know, friends and family, sharing food is the sort of centre of our lives, that, you know, keeping, you know, there's nods here to the magic art of tidying, the Japanese art. You keep your house clutter-free and your mind clutter-free. You know, butter is good for you. Processed foods aren't good for you. It's, smoking things, securing things. There's a lot of, you know, that fika, which is this wonderful Swedish idea of coffee and cakes. If you keep yourself fit and well and you go out and you spend time in the countryside, you walk and you're active, keep active, then you'll, you know, you'll be able to have a kind of an incredibly delicious cardamom donut with honey with a cup of coffee. It's an interesting thing. It's not just a cookbook. It's not a diet book. It's not a self-help book. It's all of those things. Bluebird, who are part of Macmillan, I think have done a beautiful job on the production of this book. It's a really nice size. It's fun. I'm going to enjoy cooking from it.
And I just wonder, it's interesting, John, we talked a bit about, yeah, there's been a spate of books. And in a way also, I guess we're almost at a point now, and our Monocle's correspondent in Copenhagen, actually, Michael Booth, has written a book challenging what he sees as the myth of,
the, you know, myth of hygge,
the supremacy of, not hygge specifically, but of the idea that, you know, the Nordics have got it all cracked. Do you think that this book does help to explain why they do get it more right than wrong?
Well, I think it's what it is just a really sane book. It's a really balanced book. Sig makes it perfectly clear in the book that they haven't got all the problems solved. But there are some basic fundamental principles which are more likely to lead to you having a more balanced, more happy life. And she's very, you know, she's very, in a kind of rather Scandinavian, clear-sighted way, she lays that out for you. It's really easy to read. It's really well researched. There's lots of lovely quotes from Nordic literature in there, as well as kind of, you know, just very basic lists of things that you should be trying to do. I mean, I'm not a huge self-help book kind of buyer. I do like to cook, and I am interested in, I mean, I do think there is a kind of weird way in which you do find yourself attracted to, maybe because we're Northern European as well, or whatever we are, Northern
somewhere
out there. Yeah. And I did feel in the sort of in the kind of wake of all the Brexit madness, you know, feeling very much like, yeah, these are actually, there's an interesting, Jonathan Meads did a few years ago a series about the North and about the kind of the links between Northern cooking and cuisine. And I feel it's quite an interesting thing to think about ourselves as more connected. I grew up on the Northeast coast and I always had that kind of idea of just over there are fjords and there's, you know, but there is a connection, you know, the Viking connection is a real one. So, I mean, yeah, it's not, I think she gets it right. I think there are some of the books, I think, push it too far, but I think this is a really well balanced and I think for the recipes alone, frankly, it's well worth the price of entry.
Good stuff. Well, we are all Nordics now, John. How to Hygge by Signe Johansson is out on the 20th of October, and very good it is too. Let's end, shall we, John, with Homodeus, you chuckle. Our listeners can read into that what they will, by Yuval Noah Harari. This is what, a philosophical book about humankind. We know that we're at a point in history where there are more victims of suicide than there are victims of war and crime.
Yeah, and your people are more likely to die from eating too much than eating too little.
So
old age kills more people than disease.
Is this a commentary on finding ourselves at this point?
Okay, so Harari has gone sort of to the top of the super league of, I guess you would call them historians, but, you know, he's kind of overtaken Jared Diamond. I mean, he is more than a historian. He's looking at the history of thought. He's looking at medicine. He's looking at genetics. It's anthropology. It's a kind of, his first book, the one that has sort of has secured his reputation, was Sapiens, and I guess Sapiens is a history of humankind. It's a history of the species. It was a fantastically well-reviewed, exciting. It's won lots of prizes. I remember being amazed to discover at the Hay Festival last year, it was the number one bestseller of all the books that were there. And considering there were some very, very kind of big name authors there, in a way, that's what we're interested in. We're interested in our origins. This book, Homo Deus, is his attempt to predict the future, or to write a book explaining where he thinks the future is going to go.
And John, it's subtitled a Brief History of the Future. Yeah. You're some historian if you can write a history of what's yet to come. Does he pull off the trick?
Well, not quite. I mean, it's a brilliant attempt to do it. But the reason I say not quite is I think he kind of rumbles his own game. The point he makes about us is that we're accidents of evolution. The way that we have evolved, we think we have thought of ourselves for so long as special, but in fact what we're learning, what we're beginning to learn all the time, is that we are actually ultimately data processing machines. It's a bit bleak, the ending of the book, I have to say. Hey, we're an algorithm that may not last. I don't kind of, you know, I'd say there's, you know, 2,000 years of or longer of a remarkable human culture that makes the universe feel a bit more interesting than that.
Exactly. Never let it be said that we don't get into the big questions on the Monocle Arts Review. Homo Deus is out now. It's published by Vintage. John Richardson, thanks so much for being with us, as always. That's the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. The producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us at the same time tomorrow. We'll be joined by the film critic, Karen Krizanovich. But for now, thank you very much for listening.